If you want to watch the game that we're playing this week, you can see the video version of the podcast at ericandkelby.com. Thanks for listening to The Personal History of Games. I'm your host, Eric Canius, and this week we have comedian, streamer, and my pal, Pat Bear. He took a pause from model building to talk with me about import gaming, booking shows, and League of Heels while we play DDR songs in Stepmania. Yes, I play DDR for the entirety of this chat. Here's that conversation. First question, what's your song? Number one song comes to mind.
So my favorite is, I'm going to go with Freckles, because the story of it is nonsense, and I appreciate the story of it. Because it is a Danish cover of a Japanese opening theme for an anime that was then remixed for DDR, and that doesn't make it, I forget the artist who did the cover, but it's not even in her Wikipedia page as like a notable thing that she's in the DDR, which is just like, what are you talking about? Because it's like one of many Rurouni Kenshin themes, but then covered by somebody else, and then remixed by KCP, that did a lot of remixes for DDR. It's also really fun and tricky to do. It's got a lot of great three steps. Which I really like.
Three steps are hard.
Yes. Well, you're doing Butterfly, which is a classic.
Yes.
When people talk about DDR, they're talking about second and third mix of a certain era and understanding of what DDR is. I'm talking broad. I'm not talking about people that know a lot about DDR, because they're going to talk about their favorite song that's in Ace. You know, they're not thinking of second mix and third mix, which is on the same machine. But when you're like, hey, when you were at a Dave and Buster's or you were at the Timeout Arcade in the mall, what were people dancing on DDR to? They will say, Butterfly or one of those Captain Jack songs.
Yeah, Captain Jack, he rules.
Yeah, Captain Jack does rule. You're not wrong. And yeah, maybe you're thinking about people that put double money in, and they're playing like they're doing both paths and they're like really going for it.
Yeah.
A thing I learned was I recently got back into DDR because I got a dance pad. I got a very inexpensive one because it's just for me. It's not for streaming, it's not for videos, it's just for exercise.
Yeah. What was your introduction to DDR? Was it just like you saw it at a place and thought it looked cool?
Yeah, so I was blessed to have friends who were really into import games, and they knew a lot about the world of importing things. So I was introduced to Guitar Freaks, released by Red Octane. So I knew about Guitar Freaks. I knew about lots of import stuff, and I'd heard about DDR. And so when the local arcade, Smiles, formerly Milford Amusement Center, got a third mix machine, which also had second mix, we spent a lot of money at the arcade playing DDR. And I had some friends who were good, and I was not. And then one of my friends got a Red Octane pad because you could import the games through Red Octane. So we would get pretty good DDR pads, and then one of my friends spent a lot of money on a very good DDR pad, so we would just go to his house. But we did all the tricks. We did the duct tape to a piece of cardboard trick. We did the tape vinyl sheeting on top of the DDR pad.
What is the duct tape to cardboard? What are you talking about? Like on top
of wood. So you want to turn your plastic cheap mat you got into as close as possible to a DDR pad that the DDR pad on the arcade machine.
Yeah.
Without buying the metal pad that is like over $100 at the time, and now those are incredibly expensive. People are trying to do them with our Arduino and all kinds of stuff.
I mean, I'm on a metal pad right now.
Yeah, but when people spent a lot of money there were a lot of videos that I remember finding. This is this is pre-YouTube. So this is on message boards and photos and tutorials people were doing of like how to like turn your board into like a more like the basically how to make it so that you could put sneakers on and use your DDR pad, you know, or even the tricks of like putting like the same kind of material, these little pads that you would put on the bottom of furniture.
Right, the felt pads?
Yeah, like felt pads, putting on there because that would hopefully create friction and it wouldn't slide around. Or there were people that were just like, well, I'm going to duct tape this to the cement in my basement and that's just where the DDR pad lives, you know, like because slipping on a DDR pad is awful. You know, so we did a lot of that. I mean, I never spent a lot of time at home playing. I definitely had like PS2 games for DDR, and I had like I got an adapter for my DDR pad so I could use it with my GameCube, and I got the Mario game. So yeah, and then I didn't play DDR for a really long time, and then my job at the time in New York, our offices, they started asking me to come into the office like once a week or twice a week, even though it made no sense for me to do that. But then there'd be time between me being in the office and me being at work, and we were very close to Times Square, so I would kill time in between at the Dave and Buster's in Times Square.
Ooh.
And if I left being, if I timed it out just right, I could play a few songs on the DDR machine there before school let out, and I would be embarrassed and have to leave because teens would show up. That was only during the school year. Luckily, that's what this was. Because during the day in a Dave and Buster's, when school's in session, you just have like families and businessmen shooting basketball at the basketball things, and then you know, me at the DDR machine having a great time.
That sounds like quite the crowd. What age was this, just to get like a frame of?
So this last me rediscovering DDR was in my probably late 20s. So that is in the late 2000s, almost 2010. It's around 2008 or so. And then kind of didn't think about it again for a long time. And then pretty recently, I realized that, wait, I'm not in an apartment anymore because I'm a large man. And jumping around on a DDR pad isn't great if you're on the third story apartment. It's rude. But I'm in a house and I'm also alone for a month. I'm getting a DDR pad and Stepmania. Because I knew how to use Stepmania because I did like an event where there was DDR, and the easiest way to do it was to borrow someone's USB pad and get Stepmania loaded up. So I was like, I'm familiar with Stepmania. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and pick this up. And I've been playing for like a month and a half now, just kind of for exercise and to find my old favorites. It's been pretty nice.
Yeah, that's fun, bringing back an old game. Especially, I don't know, as an adult, you have a little more funds to get the pad that you want, or even just a pad that works. And then, with the advent of technology, you can get every song you need.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so you can just find them. And there's also people make their own songs in Stepmania, because obviously every song we've been playing here was created by someone who has the rights to put it in to the game. Because Stepmania is a place to make your own songs into step charts.
Yep.
That's it. That's the only way to do it. I bought myself an incredibly cheap DDR pad, the cheapest one I could find that had Amazon delivery, which is not as cheap as it would have been if I had bought this pad 2 years ago, or even a year and a half ago, because, as you may know, we're in a global pandemic, and I'm not the first person to think, you know, it would be fun for exercise while I'm stuck at home, DDR. So all the DDR pads are more expensive than it's basically like a $10 or $15 service charge because demand is high, which I understand. And it's certainly not the worst of that people are dealing with. Like, it's not as bad as trying to get, I don't know, like a webcam or something, because that became impossible. Or just general, like a computer chair. Like, if you want a nice chair, because apparently everyone who works in an office just had a piece of garbage at home because they were only on it for like an hour at a time.
Yeah, I used my dining room chair for a few months before grabbing my chair from work.
Yeah, because people were like, oh, wait. And when I moved down here, I left from New York and moved to South Carolina, which is where I'm at now. I threw out my chair because it was kind of awful and falling apart. But I got down here and I've just got what used to be part of my parents' kitchen set, which they replaced but kept the chair. And then I just got a pad for it, which is, it's good. The pad is great, but it's not the same thing as a very good chair.
No. Yeah, I didn't think of chairs or DDR pads as things that would be in short supply. But it makes sense. Not a lot of DDR pads out there. So before DDR and you're playing in the arcades with your friends, what was your gaming like before then? Because the alternative game for this episode was NBA Jam for the Genesis.
Yes, NBA Jam is a game that I started playing to relate to my cousins. So I wasn't a huge gamer as a young person. Like, you know, I was born in 1980, so I could have been playing, you know, the Coleco or even the Master System, but I never did. My first system was the Nintendo, was the NES, and then eventually I got a Genesis because my cousins would come over and they're big into sports, and there are two of them, and one's my age and one's like a year older or 2 years older. So they basically, my mom was like, they're going to be here, like, they're staying over for a couple days. Do you want to get, like, video games that you can play with them? Because I had a Nintendo, but we got a Genesis, and we got Sonic, because that's what I wanted. And then we got NBA Jam.
Ooh.
And I kind of learned by playing with them. And I like NBA Jam quite a bit. But a lot of games I got in my early gaming were to play with my cousins. Because I didn't play a lot on my own. It wasn't until I got an Apple System 1 Macintosh that came, like, somebody pirated a bunch of games for me. And I had, like, a very cheap version of Wheel of Fortune and a bunch of other things. And I played a lot of computer games. You know, Lemonade Stand and all kinds of stuff like that on the Apple IIe and that kind of stuff. And so I was a PC gamer, but I was a Mac gamer.
The rare.
And then I got like the very rare Mac gamer. And then I got a PC and I got games on my PC. And I was honestly mostly a PC gamer, even though all my friend group were console gamers. And I mostly played like stuff with them. Like, I got a PlayStation because we were buying PlayStations and importing stuff and like getting the import chip put in. And it would be cheaper if I bought one, too. I will say a lot of my stuff is because I grew up, one of my childhood friends is Chris Kohler, who is now working in the production side of games or like I don't know exact title now, but he left games journalism. But Chris has always known what's going on and was reviewing games, you know, when he was a teenager. A lot of our friend group was really into fighting games, and so you want to import for the new fighting games. We got a Sega Saturn so that we could play the fighting games on there, but if you got the ANSI pad adapter, you could use the Sega Saturn controller on the Dreamcast, and the Sega Saturn controller has 6 buttons, whereas the Dreamcast has 6, but 2 of them are triggers. So if you want to play Marvel vs. Capcom, you got to use the Sega Saturn controller. So, and like I said, the same thing with like Guitar Freaks and all that. Like, at a certain point, it made sense for me to chip in for these things. So I got my original PlayStation because of that. I got a Dreamcast because a friend of mine knew how to burn discs for the Dreamcast, because it's really easy to burn discs on the Dreamcast.
Hell yeah, it is.
Yeah, so like, that's how I played. And that was a great investment. Yeah, it's that weird thing where when I think about like the games I played the most of, it's like lots of Pokemon, especially because I lived in New York from 2001 to 2020. So I had a commute for all that time, and sometimes I would have a very long commute. So handheld games I played a lot of, like all the Pokemon, especially all the Pokemon that came in that era, and then a lot of, for the Game Boy Advance, Yu-Gi-Oh games. Every other Yu-Gi-Oh game would be there. They would alternate. There'd be this Yu-Gi-Oh game is a weird rules and we're going out on a limb and it's nonsense. And the other one would be, this is the closest to the rule set. All these cards are real cards playing in the game. This is the World Tournament edition. So I would buy all the World Tournament ones because I couldn't afford buying cards. And I didn't know anyone that played Yu-Gi-Oh, but I really liked the Duel Monsters. So I played a lot of that and like actually eventually ended up in a tournament in New York playing Yu-Gi-Oh, and I did very poorly because I like I like weird decks, not good decks. I don't net deck ever in my life. Same thing with Hearthstone. I still play a lot of Hearthstone. If I win with my weird deck, it feels even better than if I win with a deck that everyone's playing. And if I lose with a bad deck, if I lose with a fun bad deck, well, I mean, did I really lose? Because I'm having a good time. And it's a bad deck. What am I supposed to do? Win with it?
You're covered on both sides.
Yeah.
Very good. It's called Do We Like, and I co-host it along with my partner, Robin. Robin, do you want to explain the show?
Thanks, Eric. Hi, I'm Robin, co-host of Do We Like, a podcast where Eric and I debate common people, places, and things to decide if we like them or need to leave them. Join us each week as we debate controversial topics like pickles, underwear, bubble tea, and Queen Elizabeth I. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or come find us at dowelike.com.
Okay, so I'm going to give you people that are listening to this right now, they should go to YouTube and look up Pat Bear, P-A-T-B-A-E-R-D-D-R. And you're going to get cell phone footage. This is pre-smartphone. Ooh. Cell phone footage on someone's phone, like flip phone footage. So it's not even the full screen that someone uploaded of, this is in like the 2000s, maybe 2008, maybe. I'm actually going to look it up because I won't have to. But it is me playing DDR in an arcade at Coney Island. So I'm going to look this up right now so I can tell you the year that it was uploaded, which I believe is, yes, it was uploaded 13 years ago. and it is, Pat Bear versus Eliza Dance Dance Revolution is what it's called. So if you look up Pat Bear Dance Dance Revolution, you'll find it. My good friend Nate. And my favorite comment is 13 years ago. There's only one comment on this video. There are 1,000 views because I've mentioned it occasionally. Someone says, oh, wow, that's Dino's Arcade. Good to see it. Not just us locals play DDR. So that's somebody who 13 years ago was searching, happened to find this video, who I don't know who that is. But it's not about me or my dancing. It's 2007, me playing DDR. And the best part of the video is, it's like I said, it was... somebody uploaded from their phone to YouTube. And there's a guy named Greg Burke who is in the shot next to me who is somewhat, he's honestly impressed with my DDR skills, which are not good. Also, I have really short hair in that video, which is weird for me to look at. But he is like, it's 35 seconds long, so it's just a clip of it. But he is like, genuinely impressed with me being okay at DDR. And also, it might have been end of the century now that I'm looking at the video of it. But he is like, I don't know what it is. I can't because I don't have the audio on. I can't remember. Also, the audio wasn't good because it was somebody's phone. But he seems yes. to be pretty impressed with me doing the dance. And I always really liked that.
If you need a little boost, just watch that video. Yeah.
Shout out to Eliza Skinner out there doing her thing, writing non-Muppet Star Wars Muppet comedy shows somehow. Living the dream. Yeah.
So did rhythm games in general attract you, or is it just like the kind of the idea of dancing brought you to DDR.
I liked the weird experiences, right? So like DDR is fun. I liked Guitar Freaks. I liked Drum Mania. That was expensive, so I didn't play it a lot, but that was fun. I liked the weird arcade things. I was always drawn to those because I'm not a fighting game person because I'm terrible at it. I like them, but I'm not good at them. So I wasn't going to quarter up for a fighting game at the arcade. So I would be kind of drawn towards the odder things. And so I like rhythm games. Like, you know, I've had, you know, for the Wii, I've had the Taiko drum pad. I've, you know, imported a bunch of weird controllers for things. I've never gone like, you know, they got a lot of weird DJ style stuff and 3D machines, like three dimensional machines that I always have a passing interest in, but I haven't put a lot of time into them. The weird DJ ones are like a lot of left brain and right brain. Like when you have to do like three or four things like in sequence, that's too much for me. But
Right. Rhythm,
I mean, I one thing, I have rhythm. I do have it. I'm not a good singer or dancer or musician, but I do know what, like, I can move to a rhythm. So rhythm games where you're moving your body, like, I can pick up. I don't know if I'm good at it, but I can pick it up.
I feel you. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm in a similar boat then, because I was never much into playing regular arcade games that you throw a quarter in and play Pac-Man or fighting games or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, the experiences, especially in the arcade days when they're big, is unique to see a DDR machine at a arcade. It's not something you really get at home, the same experience.
Yeah, it's not the same experience, you know. But yeah, it's been fun to get back into it. You know, I'm 40 now, but having a chance to exercise, especially, it's just been raining a lot here. So to have like something fun to do, at home has been pretty great.
Definitely. So one of the other topics you mentioned, I'm going to try and ask a question while playing, in the survey was your actually going back to how we met was through PAX and the video game conventions and with neither of us being in the games industry, but you having your cool panels and stuff like that. What brought you to bringing your comedy stuff to the video game world?
I just wish I had done it even sooner. Really what it came down to was, I went to the first two PAX East, just as somebody going to it. Right. And in conversation with people about panels, I got a chance to pick brains of a few people that worked, at PAX. And it was kind of like this thing where I was like, the thing that I took away of when I was going to early conventions, my early conventions days, was people were very impressed by the fact that I worked in comedy and worked at UCB. and I took that for granted because I was very impressed with all of them. Right. And I was like, oh yeah, I have a cool credit. Shit. And I do a show and I know people. I guess I could just do the show because I had a show that was talking about the internet and how cool the internet was. And I was like, I could make this more about games and I could get big guests. And then people don't need to know who I am. If I get one big guest, then people will come, because especially if I get guests who don't do a lot of panels, then people want to see them. And especially if it's on, like, they couldn't see them on another night, they'll come to mine. So I started doing that, and I just did 404 for a bit, and then I was helping out with League of Heels before it became League of Heels, when it was just PAX Wrestling or Game Industry Wrestling or whatever we're calling it, because I was friends with everybody running it, and I was uniquely qualified to help, not only because of my comedy training and my organization, because my day job was being a professional tech person behind the scenes and doing production and producing shows and my own shows. Also, I ran a comedy wrestling league, so I understood what the performance we needed, because we had some people who had, like, you know, a bunch of those folks have, like, theater training. Like, Eric Pope did improv stuff. He did, you know, like, he came out of Improv Boston and knew a lot of Improv Boston people. And there were people that had, like, performance or, like, theater or, like, you know, Samantha Kalman did a bunch of weird experimental theater stuff, and music stuff. Like, there were people that were like good presenters, and then people that like fell into becoming presenters because of podcasts and stuff. But to me, it was I was uniquely qualified to turn in that into how to be a person who was doing the art, not the art of wrestling, but the art of presentation with wrestling.
Yeah.
Because I always made it clear, I didn't have a wrestling show. I had a comedy show that was themed around being a wrestling promotion. And and League of Heels was not a wrestling league. It was video games all about wrestling. Yeah. I used to say, and both things are, hey, imagine you went to a sketch show like SNL, but every SNL sketch was about wrestling. That's what we're doing.
When you say it like that, it sounds like a nightmare.
Well, maybe, but because to me, I always said Chikara is a wrestling promotion that's funny. Kaiju Big Battle is a wrestling promotion that's incredibly funny and weird. League right. of Heels is a bunch of people playing video games and wrestling personas as well.
Yes.
And that's to me is mainly because I need to respect the business that exists of wrestling for my own protection. One, because I love it, and two, because there's less of that now. Like, the wrestlers we worked with were excited to work with us because they liked the idea of getting involved in some way in a fun thing, and they understood that we were doing it because we love it. And the same thing of my comedy wrestling years. People understood when we would approach people, like, we could have booked Tommy Dreamer to come hang out and paid him a little bit of money. I wasn't sure if Tommy Dreamer was going to understand what we were doing.
Right.
But when we booked Chikara people, they understood what we were doing. They totally got where we were coming from. That there are people who were going to, like, immediately... We booked Mick Foley. Mick Foley understood we weren't making fun of wrestling. We were celebrating wrestling. Like, he got it. He got that we were just like, oh, some athletic to not athletic, playing characters, heightening all the fun of it. And the same thing of, like, wrestlers that would have gotten involved or had gotten involved with League of Heels. When I booked people to do our shows, everybody I booked understood that this was just like, especially when we did the board game stuff. It was like, hey, we're playing a board game that is fun for wrestling fans and wrestlers.
Yeah,
we're just doing promos, and you'll be great at that. And then also, you could do a flip off the stage if you want. But don't, if you also want to have a day of work where you don't sweat, enjoy that as well. which was the thing I would say to anybody, because I was like, we can't pay you other than you get a free pass to a convention that you may not want to go to otherwise. But if you want to walk around and have fun, and I can tell you all about it, and I can take you on a tour. Basically, the pitch I would give to wrestlers is the pitch I would give to comedians who, because here's the thing I never said, because it never worked out. It's worked out once. Every panel I do at a PAX, I look to see who's in town that weekend at any comedy club in that city. Comedy right. club or theater, to see if I can offer them, if I know them or know someone who knows them, I can offer them a free pass to a cool, weird thing, which is PAX, in exchange for them doing a panel of an audience of at least several hundred people who will be excited to see them. And it's kind of only worked out because Mike Drucker, basically knowing that he could do one of my panels is what it pushed Mike over the edge to go to PAX, which he'd been meaning to do anyway. And he got booked on other things. But basically me saying, like, hey, if you ever do a PAX, you know you can do, like, a bunch of panels with me and they'll be good. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'll keep that in mind. And he was like, hey, I'm going to PAX. What panels can I do of yours? but I almost got Doug Benson. He was coming in the next day, unfortunately, of all our events. He was coming in on Sunday, and I was hoping he would come in on Saturday. But we almost got Doug for the only PAX South League of Heels show. I don't know what he would have done there. I think he would have been on commentary.
Probably.
But he, like, Doug and I are friendly, and I pitched it. I was like, hey, there's this gaming convention. It's called PAX. You're doing San Antonio. I know you have a show on Sunday. If you're coming in on Saturday, we have a show. Also, you get a pass the whole weekend. You know, play some video games, walk around, see some cosplay, do something in San Antonio that's not just going to the Riverwalk. And he was like, this sounds really great. I'm coming in on Sunday. If this ever works out, I would love to do it. Because he's just like, that sounds like a, like, it's like Comic-Con, but for video games, right? And I was like, yes. And he was like, great. I want to do that. Because a lot of those people are like, the pitch of like having a fun time is definitely like, you know, there are plenty of people that will do whatever for money. And there are, I happen yes. to know enough people that will do cool things for free. Everyone should be paid for the work they do, but sometimes all you can get paid in is a free pass to a cool thing. And like, I would never ask anyone to travel to a convention specifically to do my panel, but if you're going to be there, please do my panel.
Yes, I had that. I was recommended someone for the panel of Personal History of Games, and they're like, not planning on going to PAX. They're like, oh, I'd be down. I'm like, this panel is not worth going to PAX only for, so please have other plans. And they're like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like, don't come to it for my thing. Or like, same thing with my friends in Philly. I was like, hey, I'm doing a thing in Philly. Do you want to do it? You live in the city. Now I have a friend who used to live in Philly, doesn't live in Philly anymore. I won't ask him to do, I'm not going to ask him to like come back to a city he doesn't live in to do a convention.
That's thoughtful of you in ways that other people are not. That's why you're a good booker.
I mean, also it's about building relationships. I mean, that's the secret of booking is never, you never want to burn bridges. Fuck them if they suck. If they're garbage people, I don't give a shit, and I will burn every bridge with garbage people. Look, there are people who did our shows who will never do it again, and maybe they did it the first time they did it. It wasn't because I wanted them to do it, but I didn't have any control over it. But you know, you just like I in a larger thing. I never wanted to be the person that would reach out to just someone who was at PAX because they had a YouTube following. Because those people wake up on Sunday morning and go, oh, I don't want to go to that. Because they don't care. You don't have to be excited to do my thing. Because there are people who really want to do League of Heels. It's always great when someone says like, hey, I heard about that. I'd like to do it. Like there's somebody, we never got made it happen, but there was somebody at Jackbox that wanted to do it. And it never worked out. But fuck yeah, I want to book someone from Jackbox. Of course I want to do that. But then sometimes people would reach out and I would be like, I have more Twitter followers than you. And you don't post and you don't do anything on the internet, but you work for a company no one's heard of. This is not a good fit.
That sounds harsh, but as someone who's booked stuff, that's just the way it is.
Oh, I mean, with League of Heels, you could book a lot of people that maybe someone doesn't know. Like, I would sometimes book somebody that if like, I don't know who they are, but other people really know who they are. Like, we booked somebody that like a couple other people around were like, I don't know, who is this? You keep mentioning this person. And I'm like, they have an incredibly huge YouTube following of people who love old wrestling shit. This is a great idea. You might remember them because they were on a message board with you 10 years ago, but they are known on the internet and seem to be pretty cool. So we're going to book them. And then it turned out great because people were like, really excited about that person being there. And then other times I just book someone that I think is cool because I've been doing it long enough that I can book people that I think are cool that maybe that people don't know about. But when I was doing like when I was doing improvised postmortem, I could book 7 people or 8 people. So I can book somebody who's just like, this is a very funny person from Chicago. You don't know, but Kevin Budnick fucking rules and is very funny. So I'm going to book Kevin. Yeah, a lot of my audience had no idea who Kevin was. He was an illustrator who worked on some card games and was very good friends with another person who did the panel. So yeah, I booked Kevin. Kevin's more known now than he was then, but he wasn't super well known to my audience, but he's really funny and he was going to do a good job and he did. Because I have 8 people. Now, when I booked 404ing it or when I'm booking Pepper's Anime Club, which is my last of my new panels, Pepper's Anime Club, I'm booking 2 or maybe 3 people. Now I'm probably just booking 2 people because I want to book people that want to talk. Well, if I'm booking two people, they can't be just two people I think are neat.
Yeah.
At least one of them has to be somebody that, like, people are going to be like, oh, holy shit, they're doing a panel? Because I got to get people, I got to get more people than just the people who know me. So, yeah, I'm going to book somebody from Giant Bomb, or I'm going to book somebody from Loading Ready Run. You bet your ass I'm going to book that. I'm going to book Chris Schraub. Like, I'm going to book people that, like, folks are going to be like, oh, I got to go to that. Like, I'm going to book Austin Walker at a panel. Cause one, obviously, Austin Walker is great and fantastic at 404ing it. Always brought cool stuff. Always brought good energy. But also, Austin Walker's name on a list of performers is going to grab someone's attention. And then, like, and then, you know, with League of Heels, I can book some people that you've never heard of that work at a company you barely know, but they're incredibly good performers.
Yeah, as long as they're good performers and solid people, yeah, then why not?
Because I'm also, yeah, I'm also booking Mega Ran. So, like, we, you know, like, a few people are going to come because of that. Like,
do you like the puzzle of booking? I like the puzzle of booking, especially multiple people.
Yeah, I mean, like, League of Heels is too many people. even when I've done the smaller, quote unquote, the smaller shows where it's like a staff of five and a the amount of performers is 12, that's still a nightmare. Beyond when I have to book 30 plus people for a thing. But yeah, when I'm booking three people or four people, or even like Improvised Postmortem, where I'm like booking some people and asking them if there's somebody they really like that they want them to like join up with and like team with them. Other than when they say, oh yeah, hey, you know how you booked three people? We're all going to be a team. So now you have to book more people. That sucks. But yeah, when people are like, hey, my friend is super funny. They're helping running, like they help organize this thing and they're there in working and they know a lot of indie people. And I'm like, great. But when I'm booking three people or two people, yeah, sometimes it's just like, would these two people be fun? Would this be fun to do? Is this energy too chaotic? Is this energy too similar? Like, that stuff is fun. Because there are some people that just like they just vibe really well. They've never met. They met at my panel. And then suddenly they're just like, oh, this energy is great. I take a little bit of credit for friendships sometimes. League of Heels, I mean, some of my friendships come out of League of Heels, but like there are a couple people that did 404ing it and then we all hung out after. And the next day I saw them hanging out again together. And I was like, they met to do my panel. And I think they had a lot of friends in common. They would have met eventually, but I'm like, no, I just made that friendship happen. Cause I knew they would vibe well. And, you know, that doesn't always happen, but it is pretty cool when you're like, oh, yeah, I take credit for this friendship starting.
That's the power of your shows going to PAX. Everything coming together.
Yeah, I mean, some of it. I miss it. PAX Online was fine. I didn't take advantage of the fact that I could have booked people that don't go to PAX. I just booked the next two people I would have asked anyway if we had gone to PAX in Seattle. But it was still fun to do PAX Online. It just wasn't the same.
True. But to start wrapping up here.
Of course.
Oh, I'm dying.
I mean, you've been dancing. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's exercise.
It is. I won't disagree with you there. I like rhythm games for their exercise as well. But to wrap it up, what are you doing these days? You're doing your streaming. What's yours?
Primarily, you can find me at twitch.tv/PatBear. That's PatBaer. I stream three times a week with model kit building. Lego stuff, Gunpla, lots of Gundam, various other things as well. I just finished up, or at the time of this recording, I just finished up something from Evangelion. And one time a week, I do something different. A bunch of different things on Wednesdays. But yeah, twitch.tv/PatBear, twitter.com/PatBear, youtube.com/PatBear. I put up a lot of videos. I do a video series. I do a weekly series and then every other week thing. Just trying to put fun content out there on the internet. But that is the best way to find me. Please come watch a stream. They are very chill and cool.
Yeah, if you need a way to relax after playing hours of DDR.
Yeah. You want to cool down. And I promise I will not play DDR on stream. It is a thing I do just for myself. I am probably doing a charity stream coming up, and they gave me a list of things, and someone just like, hey, I know you do DDR. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do DDR on stream. That's
some things
you got to
keep for yourself. Exactly.
Yeah, you need it. Everything can become a hobby that you, everything's a hobby you can monetize, but it's important to not do that with a few things.
That shows growth and control when you cannot monetize your hobby.
Trying to.
The urge is always there, but I'm glad you're keeping stuff for yourself while still streaming. Everyone go watch Pat's stream online. Thanks everyone for listening to the Personal History of Games. Go check out Pat's stream and follow him on Twitter. Failed again just to close it out that way.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on the Personal History of Games. Bye.
You can hear more of the Personal History of Games on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to help us out, please leave us a rating and review. For updates, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at PHOGpod, or check out our website at personalhog.com. The show is hosted and produced by Eric Canius, executive produced by Robin Lands. Do We Like is brought to you by Beaned Media, a Canadian podcast network.